Welcome, lucky listeners. Grab yourselves a hot cup of... Tuck yourself down deep into the covers and make sure the lights are on. It's time for Read Me a Nightmare.
Welcome to episode 13 of Read Me a Nightmare. I'm Angelique Fons, your host, and 13 is the perfect number for today's very special episode. In our very first podcast takeover, we have CreepyPod's production of my story, A Deadful Friday the 13th, followed by an interview with the creator of CreepyPod himself, the elusive John Grills. A Deadful Friday the 13th aired on day 18 of Creepy's 31 Days of Horror this month. Voiced by the immensely talented Rissa M, I'm sure you will enjoy her performance as much as I did. Then keep your ears open after the story for an in-depth conversation with John Grills about how he found success with CreepyPod and managed to grow and monetize his podcast. With approximately 1.5 million downloads per month, I learned so much. Let's start this journey and hand off the wheel to Creepy.
Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network.
No. This is Creepy, a podcast dedicated to sharing the most famous, chilling, and disturbing creepypastas and urban legends in the world. Whether these stories truly happened or are simply fabrications is for you to decide. These stories may contain graphic depictions of violence and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Creepy presents Friday the 13th, written by Angelique Fons and narrated by Rissa M.
I died on Friday the 13th. I wasn't superstitious before, but I sure am now. The omens were all there. A full harvest moon in October, Halloween night, and it was Friday the 13th. Clearly not an auspicious time to be undergoing emergency gallbladder surgery. I was helping my boys dress up as characters from The Walking Dead when the first pang hit me. A sharp, piercing pain deep in my gut. I applied the last of their ghoulish makeup and asked my husband Louis to take them trick-or-treating in the closest subdivision. We lived on a country road about a half hour from town, so I wouldn't have to worry about little visitors demanding candy. Too remote for the goblins and ghouls. Figuring a little lie down would help my stomach, I grabbed a textbook to continue studying for my master's degree in psychology. I was a stay-at-home mom with an honors university degree, but had left my program 10 years ago when I got pregnant with the twins. Now Liam and Levi were getting older and it was time to start a new chapter. Preferably one where I could help people. I was making a few life changes. Going back to school and finally tackling the baby fat I'd put on and never managed to get rid of. The high-fat, low-carb diet was working wonders. Imagine losing 40 pounds by consuming fat, fat, and more fat? Butter, bacon, cheese, and I was almost back in my high school jeans. 30 was definitely the new 20 for me. When Halloween falls on a school night, it's always hectic trying to feed everyone before it's time to hit the streets. Instead of cooking, we had a large pepperoni pizza delivered and we all picked out. The oozy, gooey mozzarella paired with spicy meat was hot and delicious, even if it did burn the roof of my mouth. My sons complained raucously, because I ate just the toppings off of it, leaving the carby crust. "Lena, that is so wasteful," Louie said. Rushing to finish their pizza, the boys bundled up and zombie walked their way to the car. Louie laughed at them. "Good job dressing them in white. At least they are highly visible," Louie said, following them out. That greasy pizza must have been the last straw for my overtaxed gallbladder. As soon as the guys left, I was over the toilet puking like a frat girl. The searing hot burning in my gut. Torture. After about an hour or so, my family returned, laughing and arguing loudly over who had the biggest sugar haul. I felt too weak to even call out. The bathroom floor was cool on my fevered cheek, and I figured someone would have to use the washroom shortly. Levi was the first one to finally walk in and see me on the floor.
Liam? Dad? Mom's laying on the floor!
Louis took one look at me and immediately called 911 on a cell phone. Liam, the more sensitive of my boys, grabbed a face cloth and soaked it in cold water. He laid it on the back of my neck.
Mom? Are you okay? Mom?
He asked.
Oh my God, Mom. What happened to you? The flu?
Levi also asked, peeking from behind his brother. I wanted to reassure them and tell them to go back to counting their candy, but I could hardly breathe with the pain. It was taking everything I had just to remain conscious.
Forget the ambulance. I'm taking you myself.
Louis scooped me up off the floor and ran to his car, the twins trailing after us.
Boys, stay here and mind the fort. I'll call you as soon as I know what's wrong with your...
Louis' voice faded as the intense agony of the jostling made me pass out. When I came to consciousness, faces and masks were all I could see. I was being wheeled on a stretcher into surgery. The walls were blurry and the acid burning in my stomach was overwhelming. I could smell that peculiar odor that is unique to hospitals. Antiseptic mixed with the faint smell of urine.
It's okay. We are going to take good care of you.
A nurse with kind blue eyes said.
Your gallbladder needs to be removed. It's full of stones and leaking bile.
As soon as they had me in surgery, the anesthesiologist knocked me out again. Then I was in the hands of the surgeon, Dr. Weinstein.
And he wasn't having a good day. The man shouldn't have been making a sandwich, much less operating on someone. He had just been served with divorce papers an hour ago. His wife caught him cheating with their nanny. Instead of being focused on my laparoscopic cholecystectomy, he was completely distracted. Dr. Weinstein was furious he got caught. Was he envisioning his wife with every slice he performed in my guts? Because he was a little too enthusiastic. He cut through my liver. He cut into my spleen. And he removed my gallbladder, along with my cystic duct and my hepatic duct. Those he should have left alone. Though I was supposed to be under anesthesia, I could hear the beep, beep, beep of medical monitors. Then the beeping stopped.
We are losing her. Get the crash cart.
Womp.
Again.
Womp. Then peace and warmth. This dark place with light on the fringes. My life actually did flash before my eyes. The smile of my mother. My heart skipping a beat when I met Louis. The amazing smell of my twin boys the first time I held them. Then a pain ripped through my chest and the warmth was gone. I heard the beeping again.
She's back! We've got her back! She's opening her eyes. Oh my God, what's wrong with her eyes?
I tried to make it back to that warm place, but no luck. I hovered in and out of consciousness with a new feeling in my stomach. The burning had been replaced. I was hungry. Intensely, ravenously hungry.
Lena, honey, it's Louis. Please talk to me.
My husband leant over, his sweaty hand gripping my cold one. I slowly opened my eyes and saw his blurry, handsome face. He gasped.
Your eyes are white!
I wanted to ask him to explain, but my vocal cords weren't working. I just sort of growled. Sort of like how my stomach was growling. This hunger was so intense. A nurse walked in.
How are you feeling? The doctor successfully removed your gallbladder, but we had some complications during surgery.
What kind of complications? Where is the doctor?
Louis asked. I could see his face was pinched with worry.
but he looked blurry, hard to focus on. His hand was gripping mine tightly. She died on the table when her liver got punctured, and she went into toxic shock. Officially, she was gone for 15 minutes, but we brought her back. She's very lucky to be alive, the nurse said, checking my IV bag. Dr. Weinstein should be in shortly. I could hear rage in Louis's voice.
The doctor punctured her liver? Also, why are her eyes white?
She somehow grew pterygium, a mucous membrane that covers the cornea, during her time non-responsive on the table. It's not a common side effect, the nurse said. She took a look at the heart monitor and tapped it in frustration. Rather than showing the steady peaks of a beating heart, it was flat. This equipment is always malfunctioning. Let me go get you another monitor. She left the room quickly. I knew I should be in agony after having my insides stirred up like a chopped salad, but all I could feel was hunger. I had to eat something now. I opened my mouth to ask for a snack. I said. Sitting up, I ripped the IV out of my hand.
Lena, what are you doing?
Louis tried to gently push me back into the bed. I grabbed his head with surprising strength and pulled him to me. I should have felt weak. With a deep intake of breath, I put my nose to his ear and inhaled. I didn't want food. I wanted something else. I sniffed his earlobe again, one hand on his mouth to stop him from crying out. Nothing. Empty. I couldn't smell anything I wanted. Shoving him aside, I stumbled out of the room, ignoring his gasp behind me. All my limbs felt stiff. I walked with a strange, shambling gait. I had to eat. I could vaguely tell that people in the hall were talking to me.
Miss, where are you going? You shouldn't be out here.
Ignoring them, I kept smelling the air. There was something tasty. Like a bloodhound, I was on a great scent. Getting to a door that said staff only, I pushed it open. There he was, Dr. Weinstein. The surgeon that performed my surgery, sitting in front of a computer, typing furiously. Bingo. My stomach growled, and my salivary glands went into overdrive. He was so involved with typing up his report, he didn't even turn to see who entered, probably concocting some excuse for the botched surgery. I shambled over and grabbed his head and placed one hand over his mouth. Pressing my nose to his ear, the most appealing smell leaked out, like a damp chocolate cake. This is what I wanted, what I was hungry for. Sucking as hard as I could, a black haze filtered out of his ear. I gulped it greedily. So tasty. This man's evil thoughts were decadent and filling. When there was nothing left, I let him fall back down into his chair, a dazed look on his face.
I feel so good, like someone took a huge weight off my shoulders. How could I have cheated on my beautiful wife? I am not going to contest this divorce, he said.
I said.
In fact, I'll give her everything and volunteer for Doctors Without Borders. You have given me a gift. Thank you.
Louis was standing in the doorway, watching with very wide eyes.
Honey, did you just suck out that man's head?
I answered. Turning around, I stiff-legged towards the door, and Louis jumped out of the way. I was feeling a bit hungry again. Going down a flight of stairs and into the emergency waiting room, I could see a young man with a bullet wound being pushed in a wheelchair by an orderly. He was wearing gang colors, teardrop tattoos on his face. and red seeping through the bandage on his arm. I stepped in front of them and stopped the wheelchair. Before the orderly could react, I grabbed the man's head and sucked out the black haze from his ear. They were scrumptious. These dark, devious thoughts. Satisfying. When I pulled back, he looked at me in wonder.
I think I'm going to start a youth at risk program.
I stumbled out the emergency room doors into the parking lot. I was getting peckish again. And couldn't the world use fewer nasty people? This wasn't how I envisioned my role as a therapist. But sometimes your path chooses you. So many delicious, nasty thoughts in the world. And I was so hungry.
For even more from Creepy, including how to submit your own story for consideration, please visit creepypod.com.
That gave me the shivers. Have you ever heard a better zombie gargle? Rissa M. has the mad talent. Now for my chat with CreepyPod creator, John Grills. I'm here with John on Read Me a Nightmare, and John purchased my story, A Deadfall Friday the 13th, for his podcast, CreepyPod. And I'd say mine is like a baby podcast and yours is like a full-grown podcast.
I don't know about that, but thank you, I suppose.
So I'd love to just learn from you and figure out what you're doing to make your podcast a success, because you have a bunch of people on Facebook, don't you? You have this thriving community with thousands of people.
Yeah, I think there's like 10,000 people on Facebook, about 12 on Instagram.
Oh my God. What's your average download per episode?
Honestly, I have no idea. Try to stay away from stuff like that. Early on when I first started podcasting, I got super obsessed with downloads. I don't know how many times I used to refresh the statistics screen. Like, how many do I have now? How many do I have now?
Now I might be guilty of that.
It's totally normal. It happens to everybody, I think, because you want to see some sort of a tangible return on your efforts. And you want to like, are people hearing everything else? I think we're around, like, as far as like monthly is concerned, I think we do about 1.5 million a month.
Jesus Murphy. That's phenomenal. So somehow how did you hit your tipping point?
I think it really was a combination of things. One, it's very consistent content. I realized pretty early on that if I was going to do this, I wanted people to be able to rely on when an episode was coming out. You know, when I first started doing it, it was more, okay, maybe like one every 2 weeks. I just really wanted to get my favorite stories out there. There was no long-term goals, anything like that. And there were a couple of times where I had like little breaks and I was like, it's no big deal. I'm not making money. I'm just putting them out there because I want the stories to be out there.
Right, which is where I am right now.
Yeah, and again, totally normal. I think one of the key factors to growth, though, for any podcast is consistency, maybe like where expectation meets consistency, what the listener expects, because I don't think people have to turn things out not every day or every week or even necessarily every 2 weeks. If it's even monthly, if you have a consistent release schedule, people will know what to expect. I think what happens, and people get the ebbs and flows and downloads because they release an episode and then maybe they do another episode 5 days later. And then the next episode 3 weeks after that. And there's so much content out there that there's just too many options for people to really focus on. Ooh, do they have a new episode out yet? Do they have a new episode out yet? Since Apple Podcasts changed their formatting, it doesn't automatically download new episodes anymore. And that used to be the case. So now people have to go in and actually see if there's new episodes. And I think that impacted a lot of people's downloads as well.
Right.
That instead of it just being that given that, oh, when it's available, it's going to download. Now people actually have to be checking. The big part was consistency. After we did our first 31 Days of Horror, which for people listening who haven't heard my podcast, it's in October, we do a story every day, or we originally did a story every day. Now we do two stories every day. After the first one, I lost my job about 2 weeks after the first one. And the first one was meant to be the end. I didn't plan on doing the podcast after that. It was around that first October that I got contacted by Bloody Disgusting, and they were interested in the podcast, which for me is huge. I mean, Bloody Disgusting being interested in my podcast, like, why would that be a thing? Right. I was like, okay, well, I'll do a few more episodes. Maybe we'll get a chance to get some ad revenue, maybe make a little bit of money, because I wasn't making any money off of it. You know, my Patreon converted from an old podcast, and I think we had maybe 20 patrons at that time, and that wasn't covering the cost of any of our productions. Then I lost my job and I needed something to focus on. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep doing this every day just as a thing until I found a new job, so I wouldn't focus on not having a job or money.
Right, right.
And then I did another 42 days. You know, I think in the span of 90 days, I released something like 72 episodes.
Oh my God. When did you find time to sleep? That's insane.
Well, when you don't have a job, you definitely find time.
Good point.
You know, and then it just kind of went from there, and we were able to convert those daily episodes into bonus episodes on Patreon, and people converted over. They were like, okay, like I kind of proved that I could create content consistently at a certain level.
A certain quality level. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe not perfect by any means, not professional, but I kind of set a bar for, listen, this is what I can do. I kind of showed my worth in the free feed before transferring to Patreon, and people went over to Patreon and found us.
So where did you come from? What's pre-feed? I'm sorry.
I took all those bonus episodes, and it was exhausting doing episodes every single day for that long. And I pulled it back to doing like three a week.
Right.
But so I only had the Sunday episodes for free, which they always were. That was always the point. And then I was like, okay, and if you want bonus episodes, we'll move them over to Patreon. And I think it was at that time, it was $5 a month, and I would do three new stories a week. And then I bumped up to four stories a week once I hit a certain number of patrons. Yeah. And then COVID hit and I started adding an extra episode on Wednesdays just for some extra content for people. And then we started getting commercials, and people didn't like hearing commercials in the middle of episodes, which I totally understand. I was like, okay, we'll add an extra episode on Sundays so people can hear if there are commercials that people hear and they don't want to go to Patreon. It'll be between the episodes. So now 500 or so episodes later, 500 plus episodes on Patreon later, here we are.
So you have like 1,000 episodes out.
Yeah, 1,000 and change. I don't know what our final count on Patreon is. Patreon's probably getting close to 600. But yeah, I think there's 500 plus on our regular like live feed that anyone can hear.
So this is how you help monetize your podcast, is because a lot of the people are, you have to go to Patreon and pay the little bit to even hear half of your work.
Yeah.
Or even and more.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The way I looked at it is, you know, the podcast was always about a Sunday episode, like one episode a week. I mean, weekly episodes for any podcast is a pretty good standard, I think. I think turning out more than that is kind of above and beyond expectation, especially when they're produced stories as opposed to interview-based, you know, something like Joe Rogan or Adam Carolla or someone who can turn out multiple episodes in a week. And I was more trying to think like how, to your monetization point, how can I make money podcasting? And
like the magic question, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. And I had a conversation with kind of a writer friend of mine, and he's asking, he's like, is there any way you can monetize this? Because I was still unemployed, didn't have any money. Family at home wasn't the most wonderful time of the year by any means. He's like, is there any way you can make money? I'm like, I don't know. Like podcasts that I really love, like No Sleep, they switched to like a membership season program, and which they still have their free episodes and then they have bonus content too. And that's kind of what I was thinking, but it's like, I don't know how to switch to a membership platform. And he's like, well, what about Patreon? I'm like, well, I don't know how that would work. I didn't really have much success on Patreon in the past. It's like, I don't know if I really want to keep putting in that level of work and that level of stress for little to no return. There's definitely that kind of cost benefit analysis of how much of your life and your time are you putting into it for, and what are you getting back? Not all of it's monetary, but at the end of the day, monetary is definitely a part of it.
Well, there's only so many hours in the day and you do have to buy stuff, you know, mortgage, rent. Trust me, I know exactly. I'll spend a day doing an episode. And obviously at this point, it costs me money to make episodes. And I'll be like, what am I doing this for? All these hours, I could maybe be making some money.
Exactly. And it can be very, very frustrating. And fortunately, you know, I moved over to Patreon and I let people know, listen, you're still going to have the Sunday episodes. Like, that was always the deal in the first place. All I'm doing is rewarding people who want to donate to the show. So right. I've heard before people complain on other platforms about like, oh, I don't think it's fair that, you know, we can only hear so many stories for free. And it's like, that's not, and that wasn't directed at my podcast. It was directed at another one. And I said, well, that's not the point. You're still getting free episodes. It's not a paywall. It's if people want to donate to having the show even exist, then they're getting something for their money. It's capitalism. They're paying for it.
Right.
It's not like they're just saying, okay, you can have free episodes and you can have free episodes and you can't. And so I understand the argument. And at the same time, when you're talking about podcasts who are paying their production staff, that money's got to come from somewhere. All of our narrators are paid, producer, artist, everybody gets paid.
That's amazing. And is this your full-time job now?
No, I have a day job. This is just a break from my day job.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully you make some money. Hopefully you don't just pay out.
No, I mean, the podcast probably could be my day job. I would call myself pragmatic. I'm sure other people would call me a pessimist. As much as I love being or podcasting and how well podcasting is doing, there's always going to be that little voice in my head where it's like, this ride could end any day. I can't let go of having a day job yet. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, if this ends, I don't want to just find myself unemployed again, back right where I started. So yeah, as much as I would love to feel the level of stability enough to have it be my day job, right now I just keep spinning plates and, you know, putting in the 80-hour weeks or so.
What would the division be? Where do you get the majority of the income?
It kind of depends on the time of year. Patreon probably brings in the majority of the money for most of the year. And then around October, when we do all of our episodes, like we tend to do better in October.
This is your 31 Days of Horror, correct?
Yes. Because this is also the time of year where if there's, you know, we'll have the most downloads, more lucrative or more enticing to advertisers. Be like, okay, well, this show is going to get more attention this month. We'll be more interested. Plus it's Q4 and companies are a little bit more willing to spend their advertising budget or spend down their advertising budget. So if there are more commercials that start popping up on the feed, usually I attribute it to, yeah, they've got extra money that they want to get rid of. And I'm happy to take that money.
So how do you find your advertisers? How does that work?
So ours is a combination. It's a little bit more unique in regards to, my hosting platform, Acast, helps monetize podcasts. Depending on the show and depending on the number of downloads and what works, they'll have like direct sales ads, like regional. It'll be pre-made ads. Let's just say, for example, some tire company in your state has advertising budget, they'll just have an advertisement. It'll just sound like a radio commercial.
Right.
And that'll play either pre-roll, mid-roll, or post-roll on your podcast, depending on how many slots you have open or how, if you say it's okay to have mid-roll ads, which—
So Acast does that themselves, or you have to produce and put them in, or does it happen automatically through your platform?
Acast will do that themselves.
Wow. I did not know that.
So anything— basically, the easiest way to describe it is if anybody listens to our podcast, anything they hear me say has been sold and copy has been given to me as a campaign. Anything they don't hear my voice on, that's just a regional direct ad that they have space for that can help monetize and get money to your podcast.
And Acast does that for you. You don't have to find it. You just approve them, or they just end up popped in there.
It's both depending on what it is. So if it's a campaign, if you get sold on a campaign, those are the more lucrative ways of going. That's when an advertiser says, yes, we want this podcast to represent our brand. And that's when you hear ads like, HelloFresh and Casper and stuff like that, the big name ones that you hear on a lot of podcasts.
Right.
Those are called campaigns. And those are the ones where you're given copy points and you do your advertisements. And we do our scripted satires, and some people just do straight reads. It's totally up to the person. And so those are approved by me. And so if a brand comes up and they're like, we want you, or this brand is interested, are you interested in representing this brand or having or endorsing this brand? And some I say, no, I don't believe in the brand, or I don't like the messaging of the brand. Like, vaping for a while was really big and vaping companies were really pushing it. I'm like, I'm not interested in pushing vaping products, especially given everything that was happening, health issues and the targeting to teenagers and high schoolers and younger. I'm like, I'm not interested. If for some strange reason Shudder approached and said, we want you to sponsor us, they're like, do you want to sponsor Shudder? I mean, my answer is, of course, yes. I love Shudder. I watch it all the time. But someone else might be like, we don't like it.
Right.
For example, I don't know why anyone would say they don't like Shudder. I don't think anyone should say that. Everyone should sign up for Shudder, by the way.
Absolutely.
But you get that choice. You get that option of if you want to pass on a campaign or not. Otherwise, they'll just have the direct buy ads that'll just be like regionally specific, where someone listening in California might not hear the same one as someone listening in Boston or someone listening in England or Australia, et cetera. And that's not as much money, but it's some money. It's an opportunity to make money off of your podcast.
Right. That's amazing. I had no idea. I'm actually learning a lot today.
Yeah. And it depends. And different platforms use it. I personally just happen to like Acast, and we got a deal with Bloody Disgusting through Acast, and they've been nothing but great for us.
So Bloody Disgusting, tell me how does that work?
Yeah. So Bloody Disgusting got interested in getting into podcasting back in 2017. And that was kind of their first podcast that they brought on board. They were interested in getting into podcasting. They weren't really sure what to do with the space, but we were a horror narration podcast, and they're like, okay, horror, Bloody Disgusting, perfect. There wasn't really much. There wasn't really ad sales or anything like that. I mean, their focus has always been on the news, and they've been working on producing movies, etc. They brought in a really excellent rep, Heather Luttrell, who's been working with us and working to pitch us, and they'll do direct sales now too. When movies come out, like RLJE Films, you'll hear on our podcast quite a bit, they'll book advertisement with Bloody Disgusting. And part of the package is they also get shout outs on the podcast on the network. So we'll get a percentage of that too, based on how many downloads we get.
Wow.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of avenues for it and potential. I also am very, very clear-minded enough to realize that our situation's pretty specific. A lot of people just podcast on their own and they don't have a network or anything else. And that's fine. I'm totally for independent podcasting. That's definitely how I started. And Bloody Disgusting, honestly, the only reason I was interested in working with them is they're very much do your thing. We're not going to get in your way. We're not going to tell you what to do. We like what you're doing, and that's great. And there's some networks that are like, listen, you're going to do this, this, and this. Like, you're going to do this sort of thing. You need to bring in this amount of revenue. And Bloody Disgusting's never been that way. They've always been nothing but great to me. After a couple of years of really not making money on the podcast, we started working with Acast and we started getting direct sales, and our Patreon numbers really started to go up. I actually was able to start paying people, which is really nice to not rely on the kindness.
That would feel good. I must say all my readers are volunteers at this point, and
sure.
I do all the production myself.
Yeah. And it's really common. And I don't think it gets talked about a lot in podcasting, about people working in podcasting for free is not uncommon. I'd actually say the majority are not getting paid. Even narrators that you might have heard and loved and been like, oh, there's no way we'd ever get them on the show. And then you ask them, because you don't have a budget, like, hey, I don't have a budget. Would you ever be interested in reading this? It amazed me how many names were like, yeah, sure. Like, happy to. Like,
People have been very generous with their time with me, too. And I've got one of the best voices in Canada has done a few of my stories, Christy Stewart. So I used to work with her back in Global. It is phenomenal how generous people can be, which thank goodness happens. Because like I said, right now I'm net zero with my podcast. Well, it costs me, right? I pay Buzzsprout. Uh-huh. I pay, you know, I pay for things. So,
you know, I've been doing Creepy for, you know, 4.5 years or so. More often than not, I really love doing it. And, you know, I love hearing from listeners and interacting with listeners. As much as it can ruin my day to hear someone just out of the blue just tell me what I'm doing is wrong, or I'm wrong, or I'm bad at what I do, you'll hear people like, I've been having a really hard month, and listening to your podcast, it really helped me through a hard time, or forget about what's going on in my life, or whatever. I wish the negative voices had way lower volumes, but I'm very grateful for the people who do reach out just to say, hey, thanks. Like, that was great. You know, just taking the time to thank a creator on any medium, not just podcasting, I think people underestimate the impact that has, or think that the person won't respond, or, oh, they hear it all the time, this isn't going to mean anything. It means something. We're not all like Chris Hemsworth or Robert Downey or some Marvel star, or whatever, who has millions of fans and probably has a fan club page specifically for all their emails. A lot of us are just people working day jobs, working out of their houses. So, you know, when you take that time to compliment a creator that you like, even writers that you think might be huge names have day jobs, and like taking that time to just be like, hey, I really loved your book. Like, that means a lot. You know, the money's good, the money helps, but it's definitely not everything. You know, if I made good money on the podcast, but all I heard was negative criticisms, I don't think I could keep doing the podcast. It just destroy my mental state.
I never thought of that. I'm going to spend more time telling other creators how great they are now that I've talked to you.
You know, if I find an Etsy shop with something I really love, I'm going to buy it. I'm not going to ask for a discount or anything like that. I'm going to buy it because they're creators. I'm going to post about it and just say, hey, this is awesome. I really like this. You guys should check it out too. I love doing that. I love sharing the stuff that I love. Like, that makes me happy to potentially show someone else something that they could love in their life, as opposed to tearing someone down. Because I know how that makes me feel. Like, oh, there's no way I want to do that to somebody else. That just makes me horrible.
No, I agree. We definitely need more positivity out there. And you know what's really inspirational? The fact that you did, you're just out over 4 years, you said, correct?
Yeah, I think it's about 4.5.
And the first 2 years, you said you didn't make anything.
No.
So there's hope for all of us then.
Oh, there absolutely is. Podcasting, I think Apple Podcasts had some analytic back over the summer or something that said there was like 1 million podcasts available officially on Apple. And that's a lot.
That's a crowded highway.
And it's really tough when you see just news like Joe Rogan signs $100 million contract with Spotify and stuff. And you see that, and you, meanwhile, you look at your downloads and you got 10 or 5 or right. 1. And one thing that people need to understand is the difference between the top half of podcasters and the bottom half of podcasters in terms of downloads is not that many numbers.
I guess if you're reaching 20 people and those 20 people are happy with your content, you've done something.
The big thing I just ask people or podcasters is like, well, why do you want to do this? Because if it's not fun, don't podcast. If you just love doing it, that's going to create the opportunity. If you don't like doing it and you want immediate results and you want immediate success and you want all of a sudden, and you let those daydreams encroach too much into your reality of all of a sudden, you know, being on the front page of Spotify or the front page of iTunes, and oh, that's great to daydream as long as it doesn't cripple what you're trying to do. You know, if first and foremost, you're like, I just want to make this thing and I like making this thing and I'm just going to keep moving forward, that's what leads to success. And there are some people who, because they have whatever level of support or name recognition, they get shot out of a cannon right to the top of the list and the money and all that stuff. But independent podcasters can still get there. It's just going to more often than not be a longer road. And it's going to take time and patience and help, because it's really hard to become a successful podcast without someone noticing you, if it's even possible at all.
Like the tipping point. Your tipping point was Bloody Disgusting. So
I would say Bloody Disgusting, but also the No Sleep podcast, because I'm friends with a lot of people on the No Sleep podcast, and I've had the opportunity to actually perform with them live a couple of times.
Wow.
And they supported me early on and just gave me a shout out. And that really helped to draw early attention to the podcast. Like I said earlier, just thanks to someone saying, hey, here's this thing that I like. Maybe you guys should check it out. Maybe you'll like it too. Whereas, you know, they didn't say, yeah, we'll do this if you pay us so much money or whatever. It was a simple act of kindness from a random email saying like, hey, do you guys want to do this? Would you guys be interested in doing this role on my show? That really changed my life. And I can never forget or stop thanking them, as much as they probably would be like, stop thanking us. We're tired of you thanking us. Like, I can never forget the difference that made in my life.
That's amazing. I love that story. I have loved speaking to you. And I love the interview that you did with me for Horror Tree too. So I'm going to thank you again for this interview and the Horror Tree interview, and for using my story, Friday the 13th. I just was so thrilled. The story's better than I remember it when I heard Rissa read it.
Thank you for letting us use your story.
Oh. Oh, anytime, John. Okay, on that note, I guess we'll say goodbye. But listeners, tune into Creepy Pod, and their 31 Days of Horror are pretty spectacular. And there's still a few days left.
Still a few.
Until next time, sleep with your lights on. And remember to subscribe to Read Me a Nightmare wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on social media. And having learned something from today's interview, you can expect a new episode of Read Me a Nightmare every second Friday. Our next episode will feature the return of Christy Stewart reading Death Metal Fan.